Roundel House presents A Slender Thread, a novel of World War II. Book 3 in the Breaking Point series by John Rhodes. Narrated for you by Evie Butcher. What a slender thread the greatest of things can hang by. Winston Churchill, 1940. Letter from King George VI to the Governor of Malta, and the Governor's reply. The Governor, Malta. To honour her brave people, I award the George Cross to the island fortress of Malta, to bear witness to a heroism and devotion that will long be famous in history. George R.I., April 15, 1942. By God's help, Malta will not weaken, but will endure until victory is won. Lieutenant General Sir William Dobie. Part 1. Counterpunch. 1. Eleanor Shaw woke an hour before dawn. She stretched and kicked off the covers. Johnny grunted, without waking. He always slept on his back, with his arms and legs wide apart, like Leonardo da Vinci's famous sketch of a man drawn in a circle. Pity, she thought. They had to be at Luja by 05:30 at the latest. The bathroom plumbing produced a trickle of rusty water. The water company's pump house must have been bombed again, or maybe it was yet another broken water main beneath a broken street. It was always something. Malta had been bombed every single day for the past 6 weeks. In fact, almost every day for the past 2 years. And now, in the middle of 1942, reliable running water and electric lighting were dim memories from the peacetime past. She wondered how long it would take for her teeth to turn brown. Although, on the bright side, she'd heard iron was good for the blood. Johnny appeared. She saw he had his pre-operational face, his thoughts turned inward as he prepared himself for the day ahead. He was, she knew, stiffening his sinews, summoning up his blood and disguising his fair nature, as Shakespeare said, for the fight to come. They dressed quickly, saying nothing, for there was nothing to say. In these straitened times, official Royal Air Force dress codes had been all but abandoned. The naval convoys struggling to reach Malta through repeated bombing and torpedo attacks had no room for non-essentials like regulation uniforms. Everyone wore an assortment of denim garments in various shades of khaki, the RAF and the Navy, as well as the Army. Women, thank God, were actually allowed to wear trousers. And, miracles of miracles, women were even allowed to wear forage caps, which allowed them to look like women instead of like women pretending to be men. There was time for one fierce embrace, a sort of urgent, unspoken prayer for mutual survival, and then they clattered down the stairs of the married officers' quarters and into the first faint glimmerings of the Mediterranean pre-dawn. Charlie, their big black Bouvier de Flandre, led the way, erupting down the stairs and bounding into the back seat of their tiny RAF Austin 7 PD car. Keith Park, their boss, swore that the dog was larger than the car, but somehow Charlie managed to squeeze into the narrow space behind the seats. Only his lolling pink tongue and his white silk scarf were visible in the darkness. A canine version of the Cheshire cat's grin. Eleanor clambered into the driver's seat, and Johnny cranked the starter handle. The engine started with an explosive backfire, followed by a staccato racket that belied its diminutive size and woke everyone within 100 yards. Johnny jumped in, and Eleanor, crashing the gears with abandon, propelled them forward like a race car. It was amazing what high-octane aero fuel could do in a 700cc motor car engine. The headlights, inadequate.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?